Welcome to today's reading of Newsmax on the Talking Information Center on this Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. I'm your volunteer reader, Dennis McDonald, and here are your headlines. U.S.-Iran agree to 11th-hour truce after Trump's dire warnings. The United States and Iran agreed to a two-week ceasefire Tuesday, barely an hour before President Donald Trump's deadline to obliterate the rival country was set to expire, with Tehran to temporarily reopen the vital Strait of Hormuz. After more than a month of blistering attacks by the United States and Israel, Iran cast the ceasefire as a victory and said it had agreed to talks with Washington to begin Friday in Pakistan on a path to end the conflict. Trump said he had spoken to Pakistan's leaders, who requested that I hold off the destructive force being sent tonight to Iran, subject to the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing to the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz. I agree to suspend the bombing and attack of Iran for a period of 2 weeks, Trump wrote in his Truth Social platform. In a statement on social media platform X, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt lauded the deal as a culmination of a highly successful war mission. She wrote, "This is a victory for the United States that President Trump and our incredible military made happen. From the very beginning of Operation Epic Fury, President Trump estimated this would be a 4 to 6 week operation. Thanks to the unbelievable capabilities of our warriors, we have achieved and exceeded our core military objectives in 38 days. More on that tomorrow morning from at Secretary of War and Chairman Kane. The success of our military created maximum leverage, allowing President Trump and the team to engage in tough negotiations and have now created an opening for a diplomatic solution and long-term peace. Additionally, President Trump got the Strait of Hormuz reopened. Never underestimate President Trump's ability to successfully advance America's interests and broker peace." Hegseth and Kane are set for a news conference Wednesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi confirmed safe passage for 2 weeks for ships through the Strait of Hormuz, the gateway for one-fifth of the world's oil, which Tehran sealed off in retaliation for the war launched on February 28th. "If attacks against Iran are halted, our powerful armed forces will cease their defensive operations," Araghchi said. Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif of Pakistan, which has played a key mediator role, said that the ceasefire would start immediately. He said the United States, along with their allies, had agreed to a ceasefire everywhere, including Lebanon, implying that Israel had agreed to halt its invasion of its northern neighbor. Israel did not immediately react. Its assault on Lebanon to response to rocket fire by Iranian-backed Hezbollah has led to more than 1,500 deaths, according to Lebanese authorities. Israel had encouraged Trump to join the war against Iran, its arch nemesis, and in the first strikes killed the long-serving supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Oil prices ease sharply. Oil prices plunged by more than 17% after the ceasefire announcement. Costs at the pump had risen sharply since the war for ordinary Americans, putting heavy political pressure on Trump. Stock prices also soared in early trade Wednesday in Asia. Trump said the United States was very far along in negotiating a long-term agreement with Iran, which had submitted a 10-point plan that he said was workable. But Iran publicly released points that took maximalist positions, including lifting long-standing U.S. sanctions, guaranteeing its own dominion over the Strait of Hormuz, and removing U.S. forces from the region. Trump had set a deadline to Iran to open the Strait of Hormuz by 8 p.m. Washington time, midnight GMT, or 3:30 a.m. in Tehran for Iran. He had earlier threatened to destroy all power plants and bridges across a country of 90 million people, a war crime against sites that are primarily a civilian usage. Trump made threats shocking even his own standards when he warned that a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will. The rhetoric was an escalation from a profanity-laced post 2 days earlier on Easter Sunday. Pope Leo said that this threat against all the people of Iran was truly unacceptable. Heavy strikes before deadline. The United States and Israel struck key infrastructure before Trump's deadline, with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying attacks hit railways and bridges allegedly used by the Revolutionary Guards. The Israeli military also offered a rare statement of regret after it acknowledged damaging a synagogue in Tehran, saying it had been targeting a senior Iranian commander. Iran, run by Shia Muslim clerics, is home to around 100 synagogues for its historic Jewish minority. Infrastructure attacks reported by Iranian authorities Tuesday included a U.S.-Israeli strike on a bridge outside the city of Qom and another on a rail bridge in central Iran that killed two people. Iran has retaliated with weeks of drone and missile strikes on Gulf Arab states, citing their role as hubs for U.S. troops. Qatar said early Wednesday that four people were hurt by falling missile debris, including a child. AFP reporters also heard explosions in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, said they responded to missile threats. Two civilians, one of them an 8-year-old child, were killed in Baghdad when a projectile crashed into their home, police told AFP. Next we have Trump signals some embrace of dangerous 10-point plan. President Donald Trump indicated Tuesday that his administration is actively engaging with an intermediary figure, Ron, as part of ongoing back-channel diplomacy tied to a sweeping and highly controversial 10-point proposal submitted by Iran. The plan is believed to have dangerous provisions, including protection for Hezbollah and Iran, given the right to collect tolls from ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz. The emerging framework, which Trump described as significant but not good enough, marks a notable shift in tone after days of escalating threats of military action. In a social media post, Trump confirmed that he could delay planned U.S. strikes on Iranian infrastructure, including bridges and power plants, for 2 weeks, contingent on the immediate reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, a critical global energy choke point. The pause comes amid intensifying diplomatic efforts, with talks scheduled to begin in Islamabad later this week. The proposal, delivered through intermediaries including Pakistan, outlines a broad cessation of hostilities between Iran the United States and Israel. However, several of its provisions have sparked alarm in Washington and among U.S. allies, particularly its call for a halt to military operations against Hezbollah in Lebanon. Key demands in Iran's 10-point proposal: reopening the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian military coordination, immediate end to war against all elements of Iran's axis of resistance, full withdrawal of U.S. forces from Middle East bases, establishment of a secure maritime transit protocol, lifting of all U.S. primary and secondary sanctions, release of frozen Iranian financial assets abroad, compensation or reconstruction funding for war damages, guarantee that Iran will not face further military attacks, end to Israeli strikes on Hezbollah in Lebanon, regional de-escalation measures involving allied militias. Points potentially under discussion or tentatively agreed: conditional reopening of Strait of Hormuz, framework for a temporary or permanent ceasefire, maritime security coordination mechanisms, use of shipping fees for transit through Strait, approximately $2 million per vessel, to fund reconstruction instead of direct U.S. compensation. While no official confirmation has been given on which elements Washington may accept, analysts suggest the ceasefire framework and shipping agreements are the most viable starting points. However, the Strait has long been viewed as a legal channel of international shipping, not requiring any toll payment to Iran or any other nation. Giving Iran toll power could set an extremely dangerous precedent. Also, the inclusion of a demand that Israel cease attacks on Hezbollah is among the most contentious provisions. Such a concession would represent a dramatic departure from longstanding U.S. and Israeli policy, which has consistently targeted the Iran-backed group as a major regional threat. Equally controversial is the call for a full U.S. military withdrawal from the region. Though successive administrations have discussed reducing troop presence, the complete exit would mark a historic shift in American foreign policy and security posture in the Middle East. Notably, absent from Iran's proposal is any commitment to halt its nuclear program, long a central demand of the Trump administration. This omission raises questions about whether a broader agreement could satisfy U.S. strategic objectives. The current negotiation framework contrasts sharply with Trump's earlier stance. Trump had also previously emphasized the need for regime change in Iran, the dismantling of Iran's nuclear program, unconditional reopening of key shipping routes. His acknowledgement that the U.S. is now working with a negotiation framework, potentially mediated by figures like Ron, signals a pragmatic pivot, even as he maintains that the current proposal falls short. Experts say the moment presents both risk and opportunity. Alex Vatanka of Middle East Institute noted that despite significant gaps, the structure of the talks suggests a viable path toward de-escalation. "You have a window here to prevent disaster," he said. They're talking in a way that at least allows for a basic framework to emerge. Still, the political and strategic costs of accepting elements of Iran's proposal, particularly those involving Hezbollah and U.S. troop withdrawal, could prove difficult for the administration to justify domestically and among allies, notably Israel. Next, we have oil prices plunged to under $100 a barrel with truce. Oil prices plunged and U.S. stock futures jumped after President Donald Trump held off his threat of devastating attacks on Iran. U.S. crude oil futures fell more than 15%. Futures for the S&P 500 were up 2.2% as of 8:05 p.m. Eastern Time, while Dow futures rose 930 points or 2%. Late Tuesday, Trump said he was holding off on his threatened attacks on Iranian bridges, power plants, and other civilian targets, subject to Tehran's agreeing to a two-week ceasefire and reopening in the Strait of Hormuz. Iran's Supreme National Security Council, which has accepted the two-week ceasefire, and its foreign minister said passage through the strait would be allowed for the next 2 weeks under Iranian military management. Futures for U.S. crude oil sank 14.7% to $96.27 a barrel, while Brent crude, the international standard, dropped 14.4% to $93.48 a barrel. The price remains well above where it was at the start of the war. Meanwhile, as trading in Asia got underway, Japan's Nikkei rose more than 4% and South Korea's Kospi gained 6%. Earlier, U.S. stocks swung sharply during regular trading as uncertainty about the war with Iran increased after Trump had threatened that the whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again, if Iran does not meet his deadline of 8 p.m. Eastern Time to open the Strait of Hormuz. The S&P 500 fell as much as 1.2%, but stocks rallied at the end of the trading after Pakistan's prime minister urged Trump to extend his deadline for another 2 weeks and asked Iran to open up the strait for the same amount of time. The S&P 500 erased all its losses and ended with a modest gain of 0.1%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped 85 points, or 0.2%, and the NASDAQ Composite added 0.1%. They're the latest swings to hit financial markets since late February because of a deep uncertainty about when the fighting may end. Oil prices were likewise shaky. The price for a barrel of benchmark U.S. crude to be delivered in May briefly climbed above at $117 a barrel before settling at $112.95. Oil prices have spiked because the war has snarled the production and transportation of crude in the Persian Gulf. Much of that oil exits the Gulf through the Strait of Hormuz to reach customers around the world, but Iran has blocked it to enemies. The worry in markets has been that a long-term disruption will keep oil prices high for a long time and send a painful wave of inflation crashing through the global economy. Trump kept traders on edge by making a series of threats to blow up Iranian power plants, only to delay several times. The average price for a gallon of regular gasoline across the United States has leaped to $4.14, according to AAA. It was below $3 a couple of days before the United States and Israel launched an attack to begin the war in late February. In the bond market, Treasury yields eased on word of a potential ceasefire. The yield on the 10-year Treasury fell to 4.2% from 4.3% earlier Tuesday. That's still well above its 3.97% level from before the war. And the rise has pushed up rates for mortgages and other loans going to U.S. households and businesses, which slows the economy. Next, we have report. Iran's supreme leader incapacitated amid war by Charlie McCarthy. Iran's new supreme leader reportedly is unable to run the country because he's incapacitated and receiving medical treatment. According to a diplomatic memo cited by London news outlet The Times and based on U.S. and Israeli intelligence, Mojaba Khomeini, who succeeded his father after the longtime ruler's death, is in severe condition and unable to participate in decision-making for the Iranian regime. The memo reportedly places Khomeini in the holy city of Qom, a key center of Shia Islam, where he is said to be unconscious and under medical care. The revelation raises serious questions about who is actually running Iran at the time of heightened conflict with the United States and its allies. Iranian officials have insisted the new supreme leader remains in charge, but his absence from public view since the start of the war has fueled growing skepticism. Only two statements attributed to Khomeini have surfaced, both read on state television, and no verified video or audio of him has been released. Adding to doubts, a widely circulated video purporting to show Khomeini reviewing military plans has been widely dismissed as AI-generated propaganda, according to India's WION News. The clip, which appeared to show threats against Israel's Dimona nuclear facility, has not been confirmed by any official Iranian sources. Meanwhile, reports suggest Khomeini was wounded in the same strike that killed his father, Ayatollah Ali Khomeini, along with other family members. Opposition sources have gone further, claiming he may be in a coma or suffering from serious injuries. The uncertainty around Khomeini's condition has intensified speculation that Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, is effectively running the country behind the scenes. Analysts warn that such a power vacuum could make the regime more unpredictable and potentially more dangerous as tensions escalate in the region. President Donald Trump has indicated he's negotiating with Iranian officials, but notably has not dealt directly with the supreme leader, further underscoring concerns about Khomeini's ability to lead. At the same time, unusual developments surrounding the elder Khomeini's burial have risen additional questions. Intelligence reports suggest preparations are underway in Qom for a large mausoleum complex with multiple graves. Even as Iran delays a formal public funeral, a break from long-standing Shia traditions that calls for swift burial. The leadership uncertainty comes as Iran faces increasing military pressure and internal instability, with clashes reported between regime forces and opposition groups even before the war began. With the regime's top authority potentially sidelined, experts say Iran could be entering a period of heightened volatility and may complicate diplomatic efforts while increasing the risk of further escalation in the Middle East. Next, we have official kidnapped U.S. journalist freed in Baghdad. American journalist Shelley Kittleson, who was kidnapped in Baghdad last week, has been released, an Iraqi official with direct knowledge of the situation said on Tuesday. Kittleson was freed in the afternoon, said the official who spoke to the Associated Press on a condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to comment publicly. He did not share her current whereabouts, but said that before her release, she had been held in Baghdad. The powerful Iran-backed Iraqi militia, Khattabi Hezbollah, said in a statement earlier in the day it had decided to free Kittleson, who was abducted March 31st. The group said the decision came in appreciation of the patriotic stances of the ongoing Prime Minister, Mohammed Shia al-Sadani. Without giving more details, it added that this initiative will not be repeated in the future. The statement added a condition that Kittleson must leave the country immediately upon her release. The U.S. State Department did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Kataibi Hezbollah has not previously acknowledged that it was the one responsible for Kittleson's abduction, although U.S. and Iraqi officials had pointed fingers at the group. Two officials within the militia, who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to comment publicly, told the AP that in exchange for freeing Kittleson, several members of the group who had previously been detained by Iraqi authorities would be released. Kittleson, 49, a freelance journalist who lived abroad for years before the kidnapping, used Rome as her base for a time in building a respected journalism career across the Middle East, particularly in Iraq and Syria. Like many freelancers, she often worked on a shoestring budget and without the protection afforded by large news organizations to staff. She had entered Iraq again shortly before her abduction. U.S. officials have said that they warned her multiple times of threats against her, but that she did not want to leave. Iraqi officials have said that two cars involved in the kidnapping, one of which crashed while being pursued near the town of Al-Hazwa in Babil Province, southwest of Baghdad. The journalist was then transferred to a second car that fled the scene. Three Iraqi officials said earlier Tuesday that attempts to negotiate her release had run into obstacles. The two Iraqi security officials and one official from the pro-Iran coordination framework political bloc spoke to the AP on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak about the sensitive case publicly. One of the security officials said that an official with the Popular Mobilization Forces, a coalition of Iran-backed militias that is normally under the control of Iraqi military, had been tasked with communicating with the abductors to secure Kittleson's release, but had run into difficulties in communicating with the Kataib Hezbollah leadership. The primary challenge is that the leaders of the Kataib militia, specifically the commanders of the battalions, are nowhere to be found. No one knows their whereabouts, and the process of establishing contact with them is extremely complex, they said. These leaders have gone underground, maintaining no active lines of communication out of the fear of being targeted. The political official said a message has been sent to the Kataib leadership to determine their demands in exchange for releasing the kidnapped journalist. Iraqi authorities were willing to release six Kataib Hezbollah members who are currently detained, most of them in connection with attacks on a U.S. base in Syria, they said. Kataib Hezbollah has previously been accused of kidnapping foreigners. Elizabeth Surkov, a Princeton graduate student with Israeli and Russian citizenship, disappeared in Baghdad in 2023 after she was freed and handed over to the U.S. authorities in September of 2025. She said that she had been held by Kataib Hezbollah. The group never officially claimed responsibility for kidnapping her. Iran-backed militias in Iraq have also launched regular attacks on U.S. facilities in the country since the beginning of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. And now for some business news. We have Bed Bath & Beyond buying Container Store for $150 million. Bed Bath & Beyond is doubling down on its turnaround with a roughly $150 million deal to acquire the Container Store, a move that will anchor its return to physical retail and reshape its business model, Axios reported. The deal, expected to close in July, brings more than 100 Container Store locations into Bed Bath & Beyond's orbit. Rather than reopening standalone stores, the company plans to roll out dual-branded locations, integrating its products into existing Container Store footprints as it rebuilds its presence. President Amy Sullivan said the acquisition is central to a broader push to create an everything home platform that blends retail, e-commerce, and services. The strategy also includes recent moves to acquire Kirkland's, along with Elfa and Closet Works, expanding into home organization and customization. We really want to get into the home services business, Sullivan said, positioning it as a way to deepen customer ties and reduce reliance on traditional retail. The company is also reviving its signature 20% off coupons, which will be accepted across brands as it works to reconnect with shoppers. Kirkland's is being repositioned as a smaller format decor concept, while Bye Bye Baby could return to stores as early as 2027. The push follows Bed Bath & Beyond's 2023 bankruptcy and subsequent revival under Overstock, which acquired its intellectual property and adopted the brand name. The company plans to begin testing product rollouts in Container Store locations within 90 days, with a broader expansion targeted for the back-to-college season. While the strategy offers a path to growth, integrating multiple acquisitions at once presents execution risks as the retailer attempts to unify its expanding portfolio. Next, we have Amazon keeps shipping 1 billion packages via United States Postal Service. Amazon.com said Monday it has reached a new agreement with the U.S. Postal Service on package deliveries. Sources told Reuters the deal will result in Amazon, which is USPS's largest single customer, retaining about 80% of its existing deliveries with USPS, or more than 1 billion packages per year. Amazon's plan to replace the Postal Service with its own nationwide delivery service poised an existential threat to the mail agency, which has a roughly $80 billion budget. Amazon represented $6 billion in annual revenue, according to two people familiar with the business arrangement. We're pleased to have reached a new agreement with USPS that furthers our longstanding partnership and will let us continue supporting our customers and communities together, Amazon said in a statement. Amazon earlier had criticized USPS plans to auction off access to its last mile delivery network. The retailer had threatened to cut its delivery business at the cash-strapped Postal Service by at least two-thirds, Reuters reported last month. Next, we have Trump Medicare boost shields seniors' costs. The Trump administration's move to raise payments to Medicare Advantage insurers by 2.4% in 2027 could help shield seniors from higher premiums and benefit cuts after earlier fears of reductions to popular plans, the Wall Street Journal reports. Officials had initially proposed flat funding, prompting warnings that insurers might hike costs, trim benefits, or exit some markets. Instead, the finalized increase, closer to 5%, when fully adjusted, gives insurers more room to maintain coverage. This means good news for seniors and their Medicare plans. Lower risk of premium hikes, insurers face less pressure to pass costs on to enrollees. Fewer benefit cuts, extras like dental, vision, hearing, and fitness benefits are more likely to stay. More plan choices, reduced risk of insurers pulling out, especially in rural areas. Greater stability, delayed rule changes help avoid sudden disruptions to coverage. In sum, The increase is designed to prevent premium spikes, benefit reductions, and plan withdrawals. Keeping Medicare coverage, Medicare Advantage coverage more stable and predictable in 2027. We have to be wise stewards of the tax dollar, but we need to make sure that plans aren't pulling out of markets, that they're not cutting benefits that beneficiaries are relying on, said Chris Klom, Director of Medicare Program and Senior Official at the Department of Health and Human Services. Molly T. Turco, Healthcare Policy Analyst at TD Cowen Washington Research Group, added, punting on the recalibration sends a signal that the administration was swayed by industry lobbying or concerns about Medicare beneficiary impacts before the midterm elections. Next, we have average tax refund jumps $350 in 2026 by Jim Mishler. Average tax refunds are running higher in 2026, with early IRS data showing increases in refund size, total payouts, and share of filers receiving refunds. The Tax Foundation said it's tracking three key indicators during the filing season: average refund size, total refunds issued, and the number of refunds distributed. As of March 20, the average refund stood at $3,571, up from $3,221 at the same point in 2025, an increase of about $350 or 10.9%. Total refunds issued have also increased, reaching $202.6 billion compared to $179.5 billion during the same period last year, a difference of nearly $23 billion. The IRS has issued 56.7 million refunds in 2026 compared with 55.7 million at the same point in 2025, with 71.9% of filed returns receiving refunds. The IRS issued more than 104 million refunds in 2024 and 103.8 million in 2025, with two-thirds of filers receiving refunds in each year. The Tax Foundation said the share of taxpayers receiving refunds is likely to increase in 2026 as the filing season continues. The increase in refund size is tied in part to provisions in the Republican-sponsored One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which included deductions for tips, overtime, auto loan interest, and seniors. Because the IRS did not update withholding tables to reflect the 2025 tax changes, some taxpayers overpaid during the year and are receiving larger refunds. The group noted that early filing season data can fluctuate as more returns are processed and refunds tied to credits such as the Earned Income Tax Credit are released after mid-February. CNBC reported the White House previously said the average taxpayer could receive an additional $1,000 or more from tax changes based on early estimates. Tax professionals say the increase in refunds is noticeable. We are seeing an uptick in refunds, said Tom O'Sabin, Director of Tax Content and Government Relations at the National Association of Tax Professionals. I don't know that it's substantial, but one person's substantial is another person's pittance, he said. Next, we have Oracle's 30,000 people layoff shock may not be over. More rounds possible. Oracle's mass layoffs on March 31st stunned the tech world, not just for their scale. 30,000 people were immediately terminated, but for how ruthlessly they were carried out. But with Oracle's $50 billion CapEx on AI data centers still in the works, in cash flow, while up 13%, paling in comparison to its AI gamble, the cuts may not be finished, Forbes reports. In what employees describe as an abrupt, brutal process, thousands of workers across the U.S. and overseas woke up to termination emails sent before the workday began, internal company memo below. There were no prior warnings from managers, no transition meetings, just a message from Oracle leadership informing them their roles had been eliminated effective immediately. Within hours, access to company systems was shut off. The cuts, estimated at 20,000 to 30,000 employees, hit roughly 18% of Oracle's global workforce, primarily in India. Entire divisions were slashed, with some units losing as much as 30% of staff. Engineers, sales teams, and cloud personnel were all affected, with particularly heavy losses in India. In the U.S., an estimated 8,000 to 15,000 people of Oracle's total 162,000 global workforce lost their jobs, primarily software engineers, account executives, and salespeople. For many, the financial blow is severe. Unvested stock compensation, often a major component of tech pay, was wiped out overnight. For many, that meant losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity compensation. Employees with years at the company suddenly found themselves locked out of their accounts and scrambling to secure personal contact information before losing access. What makes the layoff even more striking is that they did not come during a downturn. Just weeks earlier, Oracle reported one of its strongest quarters in years, $17.2 billion in revenue, up 22%, with profits nearly doubling. Even more notable, the company disclosed a staggering $553 billion backlog of contracted future revenue. This was not a company in crisis. This was a company making a strategic shift from payroll to AI. At the center of Oracle's decision is an aggressive push into artificial intelligence in data center infrastructure, a capital-intensive transformation that is reshaping the entire tech industry. Oracle plans to spend as much as $50 billion this fiscal year building out AI data centers, a figure that has alarmed investors and strained the company's balance sheet. To fund that expansion, Oracle is raising debt and cutting costs. The layoffs are expected to free up $8 billion to $10 billion in annual cash flow, money that can be redirected into GPUs, graphics processing units, servers and data center construction. In simple terms, Oracle is trading human labor for machine capacity. The cuts also reveal a deeper shift in how work is being done. Roles tied to legacy systems, maintenance, support, and routine operations were disproportionately eliminated, while AI and cloud infrastructure teams were largely spared or even expanded. Executives may have made clear that AI systems are increasingly capable of handling tasks that once required large teams. That shift is now showing up directly in headcount decisions. While more cuts are possible, the March 31st layoffs may not be a one-time event. Oracle has already disclosed a $2.1 billion restructuring charge for fiscal 2026, with more than $1 billion in additional costs still expected before the fiscal year ends. That suggests further cuts or facility closures could be ahead. Analysts say this type of transformation rarely happens in a single wave. Companies undergoing major capital reallocation, especially into AI, tend to execute layoffs in stages as spending ramps up. Oracle's situation is particularly acute because of its financial position, unlike larger rivals such as Amazon and Microsoft, which generate massive cash flow to fund their AI expansions. Oracle is relying heavily on borrowing while simultaneously trying to build out infrastructure at scale. That creates pressure to keep freeing up capital. Because of the massive debt Oracle is taking on to bankroll its AI centers to compete with Amazon, AWS, Microsoft, Azure, and Google Cloud, its stock, ORCL, is down 25.7% year-to-date. However, the company's massive backlog, including large contracts tied to AI workloads, gives it strong viability into future revenue. But fulfilling those commitments requires building physical infrastructure quickly, and that requires cash. If costs continue to rise or timelines tighten, additional workforce reductions become one of the few levers management can pull. A broader industry pattern. Oracle is not alone. Across the tech sector, companies are making similar moves, cutting headcount while pouring billions into AI. Meta, Amazon, and others have all reduced staff as they shift spending toward data centers and machine learning infrastructure. But Oracle's approach stands out for its speed and scale, and for the stark contrast between strong financial performance and aggressive layoffs. There has been no official announcement of the second round of layoffs, but the signals are there. Rising restructuring costs, massive capital spending, and a business model increasingly centered on automation and AI. For employees who remain, the March cuts have created a climate of uncertainty. For those who lost their jobs, the experience was abrupt and in many cases financially devastating. And for investors, the question is whether Oracle can successfully execute its high-stake pivot, building out the infrastructure needed to support its massive backlog without overextending itself. What is clear is this. The March 31st layoff was not just a cost-cutting move. They were part of a broader transformation. Transformations of this scale rarely happen just once. Here's the Oracle internal layoff notice as of March 31st, 2026. We are sharing some difficult news regarding your position. After careful consideration of Oracle's current business needs, we have made the decision to eliminate your role as part of a broader organizational change. As a result, today is your last working day. We are grateful for your dedication, hard work, and impact you have made during your time with us. After signing your termination paperwork, you'll be eligible to receive a severance package subject to the terms and conditions of the severance plan. You'll receive an email from DocuSign to your Oracle email address with details on your severance and termination date. Immediate action required. To receive important follow-up information, including frequently asked questions and separation documents, to help you through this transition, you must provide a personal email address. Please submit a personal email address immediately. If you make a submission error, please resubmit a new form. Please note, the personal email address will only be used for correspondence regarding separation-related information and severance agreements. Access to your computer, email, voicemail, and files will be deactivated soon, and you will be unable to log into your computer. As a reminder, you are prohibited from downloading, copying, or retaining any Oracle confidential information. Thank you for your contributions to our organization. If you have additional questions, please reach out to the HR team, Oracle Leadership. Now on to some health news. Simple blood test may detect multiple cancers. A simple and cost-effective blood test might be able to help detect multiple cancers and other diseases, a new study says. The test works by analyzing DNA fragments in a person's bloodstream and could offer a powerful and affordable approach to screening for cancer and other health problems, researchers reported April 6 in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Early detection is crucial, and senior researcher Jasmine Zhao, a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine and investigator at the UCLA Health Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. Survival rates are far higher when cancers are caught before they spread, Zhao said in a news release. If you detect cancer at stage one, outcomes are dramatically better than at stage four. The test, called MethylScan, analyzed DNA that cells from every organ naturally shed into the bloodstream. This genetic material carries signals that reflect what is happening in the body. Every day, 50 to 70 billion cells in our body die. They don't just disappear. Their DNA goes into the bloodstream, Zhao said. That means we already have information from all of our organs circulating in the blood. The test specifically evaluates a process called DNA methylation, in which chemical tags attached to DNA help regulate gene activity. Methylation patterns differ by tissue type and can change when cells become cancerous or diseased. DNA methylation reflects the health status of a tissue, researcher Weiyan Li, a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UCLA, said in a news release. It's a very informative signal. Fortunately, most of this bloodborne DNA doesn't come from tumors or injured organs. About 80 to 90% originates from healthy blood cells, which creates background noise for the test. Researchers got around that by developing a technique that removes most of the background DNA prior to genetic sequencing. This process selectively ignores unmethylated DNA fragments. To test the accuracy of MethylScan, researchers analyzed blood samples from 1,061 people, including patients with liver, lung, ovarian, and stomach cancers. Others had liver diseases like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, alcohol-related liver disease, and fatty liver disease. With a specificity of 98%, meaning few false positives, the test detected about 63% of cancers across all stages and about 55% of early stage cancers, researchers found. MethylScan detected nearly 80% of liver cancers cases at a specificity of just over 90%. It also could distinguish between different types of liver disease, correctly classifying about 85% of patients. The methylation patterns tracked by the test helped identify where in the body a signal is coming from. Being able to trace signals back to their source is important because a positive blood test needs to be followed by imaging or other diagnostic procedures directed at the right organ, Li said. Larger trials are needed to confirm the test's performance in real-world scanning, researchers said. This study demonstrates the blood-based methylation profiling can deliver clinically meaningful information across multiple diseases, Zhao said. It's an exciting advancement that brings us closer to realizing the dream of a single assay for universal disease detection. Next, we have higher-dose Wegovy now available in the United States. Novo Nordisk said on Tuesday that it has made a higher-dose version of its blockbuster weight loss drug Wegovy available across the United States. The 7.2 milligram dose, branded as Wegovy HD, gained approval under the FDA Commissioner's National Priority Review Voucher Program last month. Before the approval, the highest authorized dose of the injectable Wegovy for weight loss was 2.4 milligrams. The company said the higher dose Wegovy will be available through U.S. pharmacies, NovoCare Pharmacy, and select telehealth providers. Cash-paying adults prescribed Wegovy HD can expect to pay $399 per month, while commercially insured patients may pay as little as $25 per month using the Wegovy savings offer, Novo said. Last month, Novo said it plans to launch a discounted prescription plan for U.S. Wegovy patients, paying for the drug themselves, offering steep discounts to regain ground ceded to Eli Lilly in the obesity drug market. Next, we have Trump Rx expands as AbbVie Genentech joined drug plan effort by Nicole Weatherholtz. Two more drug makers are joining the Trump administration's efforts to slash prescription drug prices for Americans, CBS News reported, marking another expansion of the White House-backed Trump Rx program. Pharmaceutical companies AbbVie and Genentech will become the 10th and 11th participants in the initiative, which is aimed at giving uninsured patients access to significantly lower-cost medications. AbbVie, which reached an agreement with the administration in January, will offer its blockbuster drug Humira, commonly used to treat rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis, at an 86% discount through the program. The reduced prices are targeted at Americans who lack insurance or whose plans do not cover the medications, requiring them to pay full list price. Patients with insurance typically already receive negotiated discounts. The White House official told CBS the administration is working to codify the discount prescription deals with the administration's Great Healthcare Plan to ensure that people on the government insurance can use copays for Trump Rx drugs. Congress has not yet taken up the Trump proposed plan. Humira, also known as adalimumab, can cost more than $6,900 for uninsured patients. Under Trump Rx, coupons are expected to bring the cost down to $950, a White House official told the outlet. The Trump administration has pushed aggressively to lower drug prices through most favored nation agreements, a policy designed to ensure Americans are not paying more than consumers in other countries for the same medications. Well, that concludes today's reading of Newsmax on the Talking Information Center on this Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. I hope you enjoyed today's reading, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.